For National Poetry Month in April, KWBU is highlighting four local poets to share what influences their work, as well as how they entered into the medium. Our second poet is Sierra Rahim. Rahim is a student at Baylor University, majoring in professional writing and rhetoric. She recently performed at Cultivate 712 on March 25th at a spoken word and live music event. Her poetry has also been featured in the Phoenix Literary Magazine. Welcome, Sierra.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I do want to just go into it and, you know, I want to learn how you became interested in poetry.
So for me, what started my interest in poetry was actually when I was in high school, I was a part of a speech team. And so being a part of a speech team, you kind of grow to love spoken word, like whether that be speeches or poetry or comedy, you just really grow to love it. And I remember as a part of my speech team, we kind of had to look at different works or whatnot. And I remember I came across Maya Angelou. And it was something about Maya Angelou's poetry that just spoke to me. And because of that, I was like, wow, I want to be able to write like that. I want to be able to create this feeling that she gave to me. And that what honestly started my interest in poetry was Maya Angelou.
So how would you describe your poetry?
I would describe my poetry as a combination of my life experience, the way I see the world around me, also to just the conversations that I want to start about what's happening in the world. And so it's just really about me and about life and how I see it through my eyes.
Since you started whenever you were in high school, mm-hmm. how has it, whether it's like the themes that you explore or the writing style, how have you seen your writing develop?
For me, because like when I was in high school, it's really interesting because, you know, the things you care about in high school are kind of not as mature as when you get to college. And so I noticed that when I was in high school, I kind of used poetry as a diary. Like if I was mad at a crush I had, I would just write this long poem about them. But now, like, because also I am an English major, I try to incorporate poetic devices into my poetry because for me, it's really fun just seeing how I could use my poetry to also improve my writing. And so every now and then I'll be like, I want to incorporate this poetic device. So there's a way I can do it in spoken word. And so as far as my evolution in my poetry, I've noticed it's much more mature and much more artistically diverse.
So can you tell me a little bit about the themes or subjects that you do explore in your poetry now?
Mm-hmm. For me, so I explore what it's like being a Black woman right now in my life. I noticed that I really am interested in that just because it's something that does impact me every day. I write about love. I'm currently in my first relationship. And so it's just interesting writing about that, how I kind of maneuver what it means to be in love, what it means to be a partner in a relationship. I also write about history and Black history and specifically just because I'm really interested in just discovering what does that mean as a current Black person in America. How do I interact with the past of my grandparents, my great-grandparents, and how do I transcend that into spoken word? And so that's mainly what I write about now.
Did you ever find yourself, like, learning from your poetry after, like, you've written it? Did you answer the questions that you had written down, or did you relearn something that you forgot from some of your past poetry?
Like, about myself?
Yes.
Yes. One thing that I notice about myself that when I read my old poetry, which is really weird because I guess because I know me more than anyone else, I notice that I'm more confident because, like I said, for me, my poetry was a representation of my thoughts and feelings, and I noticed that what I wrote about when I was in high school, I could just tell that I was, like, either in a low point in my life or I really was struggling with a certain aspect, while as now is more like I'm so confident. Like, I know what I'm doing. I know, like, what the beliefs I have. I'm more confident in those beliefs. I'm more assured that I'm, like, yes, this is what I believe in and I'm going to talk about it. While as then it was like, I mean, I think I believe this. And so it's just interesting just seeing, like, I just, like, I'm growing up through my poetry, just seeing that.
I think that's really cool. I don't think a lot of poets can do that. Poets, writers, they start at different ages, so it's mm-hmm. really cool that you can look back. You mentioned Maya Angelou. Who are some influential poets or writers that you believe influenced your writing style besides her?
Emily Dickinson. One of my favorite poems, I actually, like, this is my quote in life, I dwell in possibility. And it's a great poem. If you ever have the chance to read it, you should read it, because it just really shows what poetry means to me. It gives you endless amounts of possibility, the ability just to really, truly express yourself. And Emily Dickinson, if you read her poetry, she does just that. And I love her also, too. She was a great, and she was an awesome person. Like, if you read about her life, she was really cool. As well as, beside Maya Angelou, also, it's kind of funny, Little Kim. And the reason why I say Little Kim is because, like, she's very provocative. And that's one thing I noticed that I wanted to do as a writer, this element of provocativeness. And she's super provocative, but she's confident with it. And so that's why I really like her, because I listened to her and I was like, that's the point I want to get at when I write. Being provocative and not caring what people think about it. And recently for me, I was able to do that. And like I said, in a way, I credit that to Little Kim.
That's okay. You know, I am one of those people that think that musicians are poets, mm-hmm. like whether it's rap or there's this one musician I like called Sleeping at Last. Mm-hmm. And if you read his lyrics, it's very existential. And it could be a poem just like by itself.
Yes.
You know, and so Little Kim is not not weird at all. So a lot of writers that, you know, I've read, sometimes they say they have to be in like a singular mood, or mm-hmm. like they have to be in like a place or be in that mood to be able to write. Is that true for you? Do you have to be in a mood or go through a certain situation to feel inspired?
I would say more so the latter, like going through situations in my life does inspire my writing. I remember before I did the Cultivate 712, it was actually a situation that happened to me over the weekend. And I remember I was like, I need to find a way to just get this out artistically, because it was just really eating me up. And it was so funny. The day before I was supposed to do my spoken word, I woke up and I rolled over. I went to my app on my phone and I just started writing. It just started flowing. And so for me, it's just more so like situations in my life have to occur to really inspire my writing, because it's just being like the weirdest places. Like I want to invent something, right? It's for writers. So when you're in the shower and you have an idea that come to you, it's like a whiteboard, but in the shower, because that's where a lot of my thoughts and inspiration comes from too. Like I literally got the shower and just like start writing on a notepad. And so like I said, like whenever there's a situation that happened in my life, it really does inspire my writing and makes me just get into that writing mode. And it's awesome. I love it.
Are you a late night writer?
Yes, for sure.
How do you get through, if you ever have it, writer's block?
Oh my gosh, I hate writer's block so much. For me, to get through writer's block, the best thing that I know that I can do is to just stop, take a few breaths, and just listen to music, and then come back to it. Because whenever you come back to it, you start to, like, notice, okay, I can go in that direction with the poem, or I can go that direction. And also, too, like, I'm the type of person that, because, like, I don't live my life in, like, a strict way. Like, I just kind of go with the flow a lot of times. So if I don't have, like, the thoughts immediately, I'll just leave it alone. And I'll be in work, and it'll come to me, and I write it down. And so I just, because for me, writing is just a process that takes a lot of time, that I'd rather produce work that is authentic and great than just trying to hurry up and do it because I couldn't think of something good on the spot.
So you mentioned the word provocative. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like there's certain things that poets feel like when they first start out that they're not allowed to talk about?
Oh, yes. I totally agree with that. Because for me, when I first started poetry, I did a lot of topics that were quote-unquote on the safe side of things. I was like, I don't want to, like, you know, start, you know, conversations about that or make people mad. And so I literally was just like talk about stuff that I knew that wouldn't make people mad or just wouldn't cause controversy. But then I realized, because I had to ask myself, I'm like, am I being true to what I want to talk about? Or am I just writing poetry that I know people are going to like? And the crazy thing about it is you're not going to please everyone. You know, I think, I'm not sure who said it, but it was a quote that if you try to please everyone, you're going to please no one. And so I was like, the best thing that I can do is to just talk about the things that I'm passionate about. And because I'm passionate about, I'm willing to have those conversations now. And like the poem that I did at Cultivate 712 was actually, I was really scared. I'm not going to lie, because it was my first time really being provocative with my thoughts and feelings. But people really, they really liked it. And I was really happy about that. But yeah, I definitely believe that when you first start out, you're just like, am I allowed to kind of touch on these issues or whatnot? But as you get more confident, you're like, yes, I can.
So I actually want to talk about your performance. Okay. Weren't you the first person?
I was the first person.
So talk me through that. Like, not only is this a new kind of style, or mm-hmm. maybe not style, but like some themes that you're exploring. And you're also the first person to go up at this event, surrounded by other artists.
Yes.
What was that like?
It was scary. Like, because I remember I thought it was only be like a few people. I'm like, okay, I can do that. You know, 10, 15 people, no biggie. And the thing is, like, because I've done like spoken word and public speaking before. Like I said, like the biggest audience I ever performed, like public speaking wise, is like 3,000 people. So yes, yeah, so to me, it's not a big deal. But because I'm like, this is what I have to say, all of a sudden, like, I was like, yeah, this is really scary. And even like if you, like my friend recorded me, you could kind of see my hand shaking with the paper. But I was really glad that I did go first and I did kind of overcome that fear, because I feel like when you have like those moments in your life where it's kind of like a milestone for you and you overcome that milestone and you achieve it, like nothing else is scary now. Like, I just feel like I could talk about anything. I won't be scared. I'm ready, you know? And I was like, because I was pretty sure like, after I finished performing, people are going to be like, interesting, Sierra. But they didn't, which is really cool.
I actually want to tackle the whole you have, like, I am, like, flabbergasted. There's a reason why I'm in radio. I mean, what was the thing when you did talk to a crowd of 3,000 people? Was it more like a...
So it was for my school's Veterans Day Assembly, and I had to recite a poem that was... that talked about America and patriotism, just to kind of appreciate those who served our country. And I remember I did it 3 times, and my senior year was the largest crowd that we ever had that year. So it was pretty cool. So I guess that for me, performing in front of people for the most part is not that scary. It just depends on what I am performing that makes it scary. And that was scary because it was all me, all my words, all my thoughts. So.
So you're saying the first poem wasn't, it was like a...
It was someone else's, so...
Okay,
yes.
Yeah. So at Cultivate, it's like your baby.
Yes,
like,
exactly. Yeah. It's like, do you think my baby's pretty? Like,
totally understand. I do want to go into the poetry that you brought today, and so I would love to hear you read it. So before you get into that, will you say the name of the poem, if mm-hmm. it has one, and then tell me a little bit about what it's about?
So the name of the poem is called Oni's Prayer, and basically this poem is about how I believed my experience growing up in Savannah, Georgia was like. Because when you're younger, you really don't understand, especially just being a black person, the history of America. You know, because everybody's like, oh, you know, America's awesome. I love America. You know, you have like this great pride in your country. And as you get older, especially if you're a minority, you start to understand things differently. And so this poem is about me trying to find the voice of my ancestors, trying to find, okay, because, you know, being a black American, for the most part, you don't know where you come from. You know, as far as I know, I'm from Augusta, Georgia, and my grandparents are from South Carolina and Tennessee, but I don't know what parts of Africa I'm from. And this poem kind of just, I ask myself those questions and it gives me an answer. So it's like I'm calling to my ancestors and they call back to me. So that's how I would describe this poem.
Okay.
The breeze of the southern winds is the ancestral cry for freedom, for it rings not on a bell, but a djembe that vigorously vibrates the holy ground and raises the dust that formed my being. The thumping beat is distant, but also familiar, as it is designed to tell a story like my own. A brown thrasher perched his legs onto my extended index finger. Boasting his freckled brown breast proudly, he exhaled a single soft song. Discover the song of your ancestors. A flicker of light fell over his yellow eyes as he flapped his wings and flew into the southern winds, rendering a soul-stirring desire to hear the lyrics of the lost. I followed the footprints of Liberia to the edge of the murky savanna water as a single tear escaped my eyes and fell off my cheeks into the stream of ancient cries. Bodies of a dark past floated atop, branded, beaten, and bruised. A tattered drum washed ashore, revealing a story unknown to many but sacred to few. I closed my eyes as a prodigious rhythm rose through my chest, traveled through my arms, and electrified my fingertips. I tapped the base of the drum, shook the earth, awakened the souls of the silent. The tears flowed, the brown thrasher sung, the soul of Oni rose. As the echoes of the drum stifled into a whisper, the brown thrasher's request is fulfilled. I am the song of my ancestor. Niko Niabani, Niko Huru. I am home, I am free.
What's the language that you're speaking there at the end? I'm just curious.
The language that I'm speaking is Swahili.
So why did you choose Swahili? Is that significant to you?
So the reason why I chose Swahili, because when I was trying to find a language that, like an African language to kind of end the poem with, I was like, okay. So a part of my poem is this idea that I'm trying to find my ancestor's voice, and I don't know what my ancestor's voice is, but Swahili is a language that is spoken in a lot of African countries, but mostly Western African countries. And the significance of that is a lot of slave ships came from Western Africa. And so I wanted to choose a language that went along with the idea of my poem, that went along with the themes that I had within it. So,
since you've written the poem, have you learned anything about your ancestry?
Actually, yes. So my sister, she did a DNA test to find out what parts of Africa we are from and what parts of Europe we are from. And it turns out that I am like 20% Nigerian. And so it was interesting just finding out like the different parts of Africa that I'm from. And I emphasize parts because it kind of, in a way, that does show like my history as a Black American. I don't come from one African country. I come from many African countries. And in a way, it's beautiful because it does show that I am a combination of so many cultures and so many experiences. But, you know, sometimes I do wish like I had like one set. Yes, I come from this country, but it's just the harsh truth and reality for most Black Americans.
So with the title of the poem, can you tell me the inspiration behind that and what it means?
Okay, so for me, so when I was trying to think of the name of the poem, I had so many like titles that I was thinking about, and none of them felt significant for what I wanted the poem to represent. And so I came across, this is an African name, a Nigerian name actually, and the name Oni means born on holy ground. And so I decided to name it Oni's Prayer because I wanted people to really get this idea of like birthplace. Like that's another theme that's in my poem. And so I thought it was a pretty cool title to kind of have. It's like one of those titles you kind of have to look up and like to really get why I named it that. But yes.
Do you find yourself doing like a lot of research like that with some of your newer poetry?
Or
older, like your poetry in general?
So like I noticed like for my spoken word, I don't do as much like research. That's solely like me, just really what I feel, what I think about stuff. Sometimes I do it, but for my written poetry, I do a lot of like research because I really want it to be like have like little nuggets in there that you kind of have to think about, or you have to that you have to really like look up, because I think it's really cool. Like that's like the fun part about poetry, like the dissecting part. Like it's really cool how you can have so much meaning in a poem, but it can only be like four lines. I think that's really awesome and unique about poetry.
Yeah, definitely. Is there any other situations that you are comfortable speaking on, how poetry has helped you through those, like any really difficult situations, happy situations? I mean, it doesn't have to be negative.
Mm-hmm. I would say, like, I haven't wrote about it yet, but I plan on writing about it. Because I don't tell people all the time, but I was actually born with a birth defect. I was born with Peyer-Rabin sequence, and that came with a cleft palate. And for me, in my earlier years, I actually had a speech impediment, and I had to go through speech therapy. And it is something that's a part of my identity. It's a part of, like, who I am today and why I became so interested in public speaking, writing, and poetry, because it kind of gave me a voice at an early age. Although I haven't written poetry on it yet, just because it is kind of a sensitive subject. And whenever I do talk about it, I always want to make sure like I'm talking about it well, because that is a huge part of my identity. But I do see myself in the future really like talking about that.
Can you educate me on that a little bit more?
Yeah, for sure. So Pierre Robin sequence is a rare birth defect that is found mostly in Americans and Native American people. Some of the side effects of Pierre Robin sequence is the child is born with a jaw that is not fully formed. So they have breathing problems, as well as usually they are born with the cleft palate. That's one of the major side effects. And it's a birth defect that usually can be corrected when they're young. I know for myself, my parents were scared that I was going to have additional surgery for my jaw because, like I said, you're born with a jaw that kind of sits back. But it actually grew out normally, so I didn't have to have surgery for that. But like I said, because I was born with a cleft palate, I had to have surgery to repair my palate, to close it. And as I got older, like 5 or 6, speech therapy to correct my speech impediment. So.
Okay,
yes.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't even tell looking at you. So that's pretty incredible. Do you have any plans to maybe do a book or
yes.
what's going on
so
now?
My plan is so for my birthday, and it's either going to be on my birthday or September 5th, which is the National Pierre Robin Sequence Day, and I want to release my first poetry book, but I want to give like a certain amount of the proceeds to go towards the Pierre Robin Sequence Foundation, which increases awareness as well as research and as well as helping with surgeries for those who are born with it. And so my plan is to release a book on either one of those days, and it's going to be my first poetry book. I'm really excited. The title came to me in the shower like last semester, and I was like, there's something I need to do with this. I don't know what it is yet. And then once it was over winter break, and I was like, it's my first poetry book. That's the name of the title. And so yes, I'm really excited about that. You know, I've just been writing a lot. I've been trying to make sure, figure out what's going to be like the important themes I want in my book. And so I'm super, super excited for that.
Very great. Well, thank you, Sierra, for being a part of KWBU's National Poetry Series. We appreciate you coming in.
No problem. Thank you for having me.